Dr. Mart, when you look back and consider all of the different journal productions that have happened under Cecilia and sacred music, and even going back to Catholic choir master, what, in your opinion, has been the primary contribution?
Well, I can say that the intended primary contribution has been the education of practicing church musicians. So that means practical studies, historical studies, even some analytic studies, some discussions of music, and particularly discussions of liturgy. And as we have said before, a good deal of sacred music that presently deals with liturgy. And the reason for that is that the crisis that we're in church music is a liturgical one, not a musical one. I mean, they're certainly tied together, and you could say it's a musical crisis as well. But the solution to it is the solution to having a correct notion of what the liturgy is supposed to accomplish. So I would say that that's been the, in my mind, that's been the purpose of sacred music. And I think, going back at least to Father Schuller, that was the case. I know his whole career was one that was involved with the education of church musicians. And he started the Twin Cities Catholic Chorale in order to, I mean, it was a citywide choir that met, I don't know, once a month or something like that, and it was to introduce them to better repertory. So he was an educator all his life, and I think that that's the primary aim of these journals. You look back at some of the issues of Cecilia, and you see that part of it is the cultivation of the Church Music Association, or the Society of Saint Cecilia itself. And of course, then you have the colloquium and those things that relate to the purpose of the journal.
So when you say education, does that mean that it's different than some of the other journals where 90% or a good deal of those is basically not commercials, but advertisements for, I guess, publishers and... you know, things of that nature? Because I don't feel that there were very many advertisements in the old journals. I know Cecilia would occasionally advertise here and there.
I remember talking to Father March, who edited Sacred Music for, I don't know, 6 or 8 years probably. And he spoke about the fact that he tried to find advertisements to help pay for the journal. So they did have some kind of small, maybe 1 or 2 pages worth of advertisements. At this point, we're going to be having some pages that advertise our own things, the colloquium, and some of our publications as well. So that's a little bit of a new thing in sacred music, but it'll simply be added pages to the journal that's already there. And it'll be separate pages. It won't be. I mean, I don't like myself the image of a page that's dotted with little advertisements and has articles kind of creeping around the advertisements.
Well, let me ask you this. This might be going back a little bit before you got involved, but before the advent of computers, you know, typesetting must have been so laborious and time-consuming. I guess my question is, do you think there might have been a temptation to give up the journal, for example, during the 1940s, the war years?
You know, I don't really know anything about that. I think that the time for the temptation to give up the journal was just after the council, and it was people like Father March and Monsignor Schuller who simply insisted that we must keep it up, regardless of the obstacles. And at that time, it wasn't really a question of computers yet. It was just that there was a longer time to prepare it. As we have it now, if everybody does their job, an issue can be prepared quite quickly. We still use a typesetter, but it's a computer typesetter. And if that person is really on top of it, it takes a week, and then it takes 3 or 4 more days to proofread what she's produced, and then it takes a couple of weeks to produce it by the printer and to get it into the mail. So if you have a text of a journal finished in a computer file, it will be out in a month.
You once told me that Monsignor Schuller told you that he said we must keep it going because they'll need it later on. Is that correct?
Yes, he said it's going to be needed at some time. He understood very well that for the moment a battle had been lost, and that the practice in the Catholic Church had gone to something that was inimical to the tradition. But he understood also that what we stand for is permanent and perennial, and that it will come back in one way or another. And so the keeping of the journal and the society was a question of having something in the bank ready to withdraw when you can. And also to help the people who are maintaining the tradition to do so, to give them the encouragement and the collegial support and the information that can keep them going. The very fact that Monsignor Schuller kept that high mass with orchestra and the Mozart masses was a paradigm for some people. And I think that one of the things that we have to maintain as a church music association is the notion of this paradigm. There is an ideal form which we come close to realizing at the colloquium, and which isn't being done in most parishes, but can in fact inspire them to work for it, and can inspire them to introduce more excellent and properly liturgical music.
Well, along those lines, in terms of the people that are in your organization, the members, yeah. I want to read you a very short quote. It's only a sentence long. And this quote is by Antonelli, who was the first, Cardinal Antonelli was the first secretary of the Concilium. And this is what he said. He said, regarding the Concilium, many of those who have influenced the reform have no love and no veneration of that which has been handed down to us. They begin by despising everything that is actually there. Now, my question to you is, the CMAA has always seemed to attract people that are not like that. In other words, the people in your organization do not begin by despising everything that is actually there. And yet, you never specifically say these are the type of people that we want in our organization. And I just wonder if you could speak to that.
Well, I think our membership is open to anybody who's interested in what we're doing. And I know there are people who have been avid subscribers to the journal who don't do anything like what we do, but they look to us for ideas and for principles that may apply in their particular case. So we haven't tried to be selective about who are members. We have tried to hold on to the thing that, I mean, that Cardinal Ratzinger finally said, or that in fact Pope Benedict said. It was one of his first, it was at a Christmas allocution to the Curia. You may be familiar with it, where he spoke about the hermeneutic of continuity as opposed to the hermeneutic of disruption, and that the proper view of everything that was done after the council is that it should be a matter of development and continuity with the tradition. And that was something that Monsignor Schuller was very strong about. He and I and the rest of us do not oppose new church music, and the Church Music Association certainly at this point doesn't oppose the use of English. What we do oppose is use of music that isn't suitably liturgical, and music that doesn't follow Pope Pius X's notion that the closer music approaches Gregorian chant, the better suited it is for the liturgy.
And Theodore Maurier was also someone who seemed very open to, I guess, music in English.
Yes.
and newer compositional styles. And
he published that collection of hymns and songs and liturgical music of all kinds in English.
Well, let me ask you a loaded question, if I may.
Okay.
Have you always agreed with everything that has been printed in these journals?
Oh, you can't. You know, at this point, the principles upon which we work have been so diversified, and everybody has his own kind of set of ideals and notions of how things ought to be, that we have to be extremely tolerant of other people's views. I think the forthcoming issue, in which there will be an article about the question of the Mass in the ordinary form, and an article that's somewhat critical of it. And then there will be my article, which gives the reasons for the way in which we can, in fact, continue to use the ordinary in the ordinary form. And so even between those two articles, people are not going to agree. So there is a function of raising issues and giving people the opportunity to have some kind of conference about them.
Well, I've seen your name printed in the front of the journal going back all the way to the 70s, and I'm just curious if you've had any, you know, discussions with Schuller or anyone else where it came down to one person saying this should not be printed by us and another person saying no, it's okay. I'd be curious. I don't know whether you can even reveal that, but I mean, were those types of discussions that were had?
No, I didn't have any input or participation in such discussions, and I think the reason was that Monsignor Schuller decided it all for himself. I think there would be points at which he would not allow for any discussion. And I remember one of those points was the singing of the lessons. I said, we have always sung our lessons in English. And he simply said quite dogmatically, if you're going to sing, what is being done in Latin is sung, what is being done in English is spoken, period. No further discussion. And I think he and Monsignor Obrecht agreed about that. But I think that, you know, he at least tolerated by publishing the articles in which I spoke about those.
Well, Dr. Mart, I appreciate your time. This last minute, there seems to be some interference on the line, so maybe that's a signal that I should wrap this up.
Okay.